hard. She started Christmas the same every year. She made blueberry muffins and fresh orange juice. The words came out in a woodpecker staccato. We would eat in front of the fireplace, opening stockings, while she and Dad told me stories from their childhood, and eventually we started making up crazy stories together. We would all start cooking the duck and then open gifts, and after dinner we would curl up in front of the fireplace and read. His voice was barely audible.
Sounds perfect.
It was. I agreed, more softly now, lost in the memory. Mom loved books, too. Every gift was a book, or a journal, or cool pens or paper, and she read everything, like every book I saw on the tables at the bookstore she had already read.
Sounds like I would really like your mom.
Everyone loved her, I told him. She didn't have much family. Her parents died when she was young, too, but I swear everyone she met claimed her as their own. And they all floundered like fish out of water now without her, unsure what to do for us, unsure how to navigate Dad's quiet reserve.
Did she work?
Elliot asked. She was a buyer for Books, Inc.
Wow, really?
He sounded impressed that she was part of such a large Bay Area retailer, but inside I knew she'd grown tired of it. She always wanted her own store. It was only when she started getting sick that she and Dad were in a position to afford it.
Is that why your dad is building this closet for you?
I shook my head, but the idea hadn't even occurred to me until he said it. I don't think so. Maybe?
Maybe he wanted a place you could feel close to her.
I was still shaking my head. Dad knew I couldn't possibly think of Mom more, and he wouldn't try to help me think of her less, either. It wouldn't help. Just like holding your breath doesn't change your body's need for oxygen. And as if I'd said that aloud, he asked,
But do you think of her more when you're in here?
Of course, I thought, but I ignored him, fidgeting instead with the edge of the quilt hanging over the side of the beanbag. I think of her everywhere. She is everywhere, in every moment, and also she's in no one moment. She misses every single one of my moments, and I'm not sure who that is harder for, me surviving here without her, or her without me, existing wherever she is.
Macy?
What?
Do you think of her in here? Is that why you love this room?
I love the room because I love reading. And because when I find that book that makes me lose myself for just 1 hour, maybe more, I forget. And because my dad thinks of Mom every time he buys me a book. And because you're here, and I feel about 1,000 times less lonely with you.
But
please stop. I squeezed my eyes shut, feeling my palms sweat, heart race, stomach curl into a knot around itself, and all the feelings that sometimes felt too big for my body.
Do you ever cry about her?
Are you kidding? I gasped, and his eyes widened, but he didn't back down.
It's just that it's Christmas, he said quietly. And when my mom was baking cookies earlier, I realized how familiar it was. It must be weird for you, that's all.
Yeah. He leaned in, trying to get me to look at him.
I just want you to know you can talk to me.
I don't need to talk about it. He sat up, watching me for a few more breaths of silence, and then returned to his book. Now, Wednesday, October 4th. I leave the warm comfort of bed and shuffle into the kitchen, kissing the top of a head of brown tangles. Sean should know by now that we can't be sneaky in the morning. Phoebe is always up before us anyway. Phoebe is a dream kid. She's 6, clever and affectionate and boisterous in a way that tells me a little bit about her mom, because her dad is all mellow containment. Who the hell knows where Ashley, her deadbeat mother, is? But it stabbed something in me to see Phoebe growing up without her. At least I had 10 years with Mom, and her disappearance from my life doesn't feel like a betrayal.
Phoebe only got 3 before Ashley went to a weekend retreat for her investment banking job and came home with a taste for cocaine that turned into a hankering for crack, which eventually led to her giving up everything for speedballs. At what point will Sean be forced to tell his perfect kid that her mom loved drugs more than she loved them? I remember walking out of his bedroom the morning after our first tipsy hookup to find Phoebe sitting at the kitchen table eating rice chex, her hair already in crooked pigtails, wearing mismatched socks, puppy dog leggings, and a polka dot sweater. In his haze of flirtation, Sean hadn't mentioned he had a kid. I try to see it more as a testament of how great my boobs looked in that blue sweater than a huge dickish omission on his part. That morning she looked up at me, eyes wide enough to easily confirm what he'd said the night before, that he hadn't brought a woman home with him in 3 years, and asked if I was a new roommate. How could I say no to puppy dog leggings and crooked ponytails? I've been there every night since. It's not really a sacrifice. Sean is a dream in bed, easygoing, and makes a mean cup of coffee. At 42, he's also financially secure, which goes a long way when you're staring down the barrel at med school loans. And maybe it was initially the alcohol, but sex with him was only the second sex of my life that didn't feel immediately afterward like I'd sent something priceless crashing to the floor. "Chex?" I ask her, blindly reaching for the coffee filters above the sink. "Yes, please. Sleep good?" She gives a small grunt of affirmation, and then after a minute mumbles, "It was hot." So it wasn't just my body's claustrophobic response to seeing Elliot and waking up beside Sean. Her dad's been futzing with the thermostat again. That man was born for Central Texas weather, not Bay Area. I move across the room, turning the heat down. "I thought you were on daddy heater duty last night." Phoebe giggles. "He snuck away from me." The sound of the shower turning on drifts into the kitchen, and I feel like I've just been given a game show challenge with a buzzer counting down. Get out of the house in the next 2 minutes. I pour Phoebe cereal, jog into the bedroom, pull on a clean set of scrubs, pour my coffee, yank my shoes on, and plant one more kiss on Phoebe's head before I'm out the door. It's crazy. At least it makes me sound crazy. But if Sean asked me about my day yesterday, I know without a doubt it would all come tumbling out. I saw Elliot Petropoulos yesterday for the first time in almost exactly 11 years, and I realized that I'm still in love with him and probably always will be. Still wanna marry me? Unfortunately, a couple of days' distance doesn't appear to be in the cards. Elliot is waiting outside the hospital when I walk up the hill from the bus stop. It isn't accurate to say that my heart stops, because really, I feel its existence intensely. A phantom limb. My heart pinches in and then roars to life, brutally punching me from the inside out. I slow my steps and try to figure out what to say. Irritation flares in me. He can't be faulted for showing up at Saul's when I happened to be there yesterday, but today is all him. "Elliot." He turns when I call his name, and his posture deflates a little in relief.
"I was hoping you'd show up early today."
"Early?" I look at him as I approach, eyes narrowed, stopping a few feet from where he stands, hands deep in the pockets of his black jeans. I ask, "How did you know where and what time I was supposed to work?" Guilt drains the color from his cheeks.
"George's wife works in reception there."
He lifts his chin, indicating the woman who is sitting just inside the sliding doors and whom I've seen every morning for the past few months. "Her name is Liz," I confirm flatly, remembering the 3 letters etched into her blue plastic name tag.
"Yeah,"
he says quietly.
"Liz Petropoulos."
I laugh incredulously. Under no other circumstances can I imagine a hospital administrative employee giving out information about a physician's work schedule. People turn pretty unreasonable when a loved one gets sick. Make that loved one a child and forget about it. Even in the short time I've been working here, I've seen parents go after doctors who failed to cure their kid. Elliot stares at me, unblinking.
"Liz knows I'm not dangerous, Macy."
She could be fired, I'm a physician in critical pediatrics. She can't just give out my information, not even if it's her own family.
Okay, shit. I shouldn't have done that,
he says, genuinely contrite.
Look, I work at 10.
Squinting past me down Mariposa, he says,
I was hoping we would have time to talk a little before then.
When I don't say anything in reply, he bends to meet my gaze, pressing.
Do you have time?
I look up at him, and our eyes hook, tunneling me back to every other time we shared an intense silent exchange. Even this many years later, I think we can read each other pretty fucking well. Breaking the connection, I glance down at my watch. It's just after 7:30. And although no one upstairs would complain if I showed up to work an hour and a half before I was scheduled, Elliot would know that if I said I had to get inside, I'd be lying. Yeah, I tell him. I have about an hour. He tilts his head, slowly leans to the right, and as a smile curves his mouth, he takes one shuffle step, then another, as if luring me with his cuteness.
Coffee?
His smile grows, and I notice his teeth. How even they are. A flash of Elliot at 14 wearing headgear pulses through my thoughts.
Bakery? Greasy spoon?
I point to the next block and the tiny four-table cafe that is yet to be overrun with residents and family members anxiously waiting for news post-surgery. Inside, it's warm, bordering on too warm, the theme of my morning, and there are still two tables empty up front. Seating ourselves, we pick up the menus and peruse in tight silence.
What's good?
He asks. I laugh. I've never had breakfast here. Elliot looks up at me, blinks leisurely, and something in my stomach melts into a liquid heat that spreads lower. What's weird, I realize, is that Elliot and I ate out together only a handful of times, and never alone. I usually scarf a muffin or bagel from the cafeteria. I break eye contact and decide on the yogurt and granola parfait before putting my menu down. I bet everything is pretty tasty. Covertly, I watch him read, his eyes scanning quickly across the words. Elliot and words. Peanut butter and chocolate. Coffee and biscotti. Love matches made in heaven. He reaches up, idly scratching his neck as he hums.
Eggs or pancakes? Eggs or pancakes?
As he leans forward on an elbow, his shoulder muscle bunches beneath his cotton t-shirt. He rubs a finger back and forth just below his bottom lip. His phone buzzes near his arm, but he ignores it. Have mercy. The only thought I have, bewildering and breathless, is that Elliot has become a man who knows how to use his body. I didn't notice it yesterday. Couldn't have. As he grins in his decision, as he slides the menu gently back into the holder, as he reaches for his napkin and lays it carefully across his lap, as he looks up at me, pursing his lips slightly in happiness, I suddenly feel grateful for the 11 intervening years, because would I have noticed all these little things otherwise, or would they have blended together, blurring, known as the constellation of tiny mannerisms that slowly becomes just Elliot? I blink away when our waitress comes to the table and takes our order. When she leaves, he leans in again.
Is it possible to catch me up on a decade over breakfast?
Memories reel through my thoughts, leaving for college in a fog, living in the dorm with Sabrina, and later in a small apartment off campus that always seemed to be full of books and beer bottles and clouds of weed smoke. Moving with her to Baltimore for med school, and the long nights I spent pseudo-praying that I would be matched at UCSF so I could live close to home again, even if home was empty. How does one condense a lifetime into the time it takes to share a cup of coffee? Looking back, it doesn't feel all that busy, I say. College, med school.
Well, and friends and lovers, joy and loss, I assume,
he says, hitting the nail directly on the head. His expression straightens with awareness. An awkward silence grows like a canyon between us.
I didn't mean us,
he says, adding in a mumble,
necessarily.
With a dry laugh, I lean back in my seat. I haven't been marinating in bad feelings, Elle. Wow, that's a lie. When his phone buzzes again beside him, he pushes it away.
Then why not call?
A lot happened. I shift back a little in my seat as our drinks arrive. His eyebrows slant down in justifiable confusion. I've just told him my life was essentially rote and straightforward, but then too much happened to bother calling. My mind cycles through a calendar of years gone by, and another sour awareness rolls over me. Elliot turns 29 tomorrow. I've missed nearly all of his 20s. Happy early birthday, by the way, I say quietly. His eyes go soft, mouth curving at the edges.
Thanks, Mace.
October 5th has always been a tough day for me. What will it feel like this year now that I've laid eyes on him? I cup my hands around my warm mug, changing the subject. What about you? What have you been doing? He shrugs and sips his cappuccino, wiping a casual finger across his upper lip when it comes away foamy. Obvious comfort in his own body causes renewed heat to ripple through mine. Never have I known someone so wholly himself as Elliot.
I graduated early from Cal, he says, and moved to Manhattan for a couple years.
This hits the stall button in my brain. Elliot personifies Northern California with all its shaggy chaos. I can't imagine him in New York. Manhattan? I repeat. He laughs.
I know. Total insanity. But it's the kind of place I could only stomach in my 20s. After a few years there, I interned at a literary agency for a while, but didn't love it. I came back here almost 2 years ago and started working for a nonprofit literacy group. I'm still there a couple days a week, but I started writing a novel. It's going really well.
Writing a book? I grin. Who would have guessed? He laughs harder this time, and the sound is warm and growling.
Everyone?
I find myself biting both of my lips to rein in my smile, and his expression slowly straightens.
Can I ask you something?
He asks. Sure.
What made you decide to come here with me this morning?
I don't really need to point out that he pushed his way into my schedule, because I know that's not really what he means. What he said about Liz is true. We all know Elliot isn't dangerous. I could have told him to go home and not contact me again, and he would have listened. So why didn't I? I have no idea. I don't think I would have been able to say no to you twice. He likes that answer. A small smile arcs his mouth, and nostalgia floods my veins.
You went to med school at Hopkins,
he says with quiet wonder in his voice.
Undergrad at Tufts. I'm so proud of you, Mace.
My eyes go wide in understanding. You rat! You Googled me?
You didn't Google me? He shoots back. Come on, that's step one post-run-in.
I got home from work at 2 in the morning. I fell face first into the pillow. I don't know if I've brushed my teeth since this weekend. His grin is so genuinely happy, it works a creaky hinge open inside me.
Was it always your plan to move back here, or was it just where you matched?
This was my first choice.
You wanted to be close to Duncan.
He's nodding as if this makes perfect sense, and it stabs me.
When did he die?
Was it always your plan to move back here? I can see him working through my deflection, but he takes a deep breath and lets it out slowly.
It was always my plan to live wherever you were. That plan failed, but I figured my odds of seeing you again were pretty good back in Berkeley.
This throws me. As in, I am a brick and have been hurled at the glass window. Oh.
You knew that. You had to have known that I'd be here waiting.
I swallow a sip of water quickly to reply. I don't think I knew that you were still hoping I
loved you.
I nod quickly at this bombshell interruption, looking for the rescue of our waitress bringing food. But she isn't there.
You loved me too, you know.
He says quietly.
It was everything.
I feel as though I've been shoved. And push away from the table a little, but he leans in.
Sorry, this is too intense. I'm just terrified of not getting a chance to say it.
His phone hops across the table again, buzzing. Do you need to get that? I ask. Elliot rubs his face and then leans his chair back, eyes closed, face tilted to the ceiling. It's only now that I realize how stubbly he is, how tired he looks. I lean back in. Elliot, is everything okay? He nods, straightening.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Eyeing me for a lingering moment, he seems to decide to tell me what's on his mind.
I broke up with my girlfriend last night. She's calling. She thinks she wants to talk, but really I think she just wants to yell at me. She won't feel great afterwards, so I'm sparing us both for now.
I swallow past an enormous lump in my throat. You broke up with her last night? He nods, toying with a straw wrapper and thanking the waitress quietly as she deposits our food in front of us. When she leaves, he admits in a low voice,
"You're the love of my life. I assumed I would get over you eventually, but seeing you yesterday..."
He shakes his head.
"I couldn't go home to someone else and pretend to love her with everything I have."
Nausea rolls through me. I honestly don't even know how to translate this heavy emotion in my chest. Is it that I relate so intensely to what he's saying, but am far more of a coward? Or is it the opposite, that I have moved on, have found someone, and don't want the intrusion of Elliot into my easy, simple life?
"Macy,"
he says, more urgently now, and opens his mouth to continue, but another trigger has been pulled, another game show challenge. I dig for my wallet, racing the buzzer, but this time Elliot stops me, catching my arm in his gentle grip, his cheeks pink with anger.
"You can't do this. You can't just continually run from this conversation. It's been 11 years in the making."
Leaning in, he clenches his jaw as he adds,
"I know I messed up, but was it that bad? So bad you just vanished?"
"No, it wasn't. Not at first." "This," I say, looking around us, "is a terrible idea, and not because of our past. Okay, yes, it's partly that, but it's also the intervening years." I meet his eyes. "You broke up with your girlfriend last night after seeing me for 2 minutes. Elliot, I'm getting married." He drops my arm, blinking a few times and seeming, for the first time I've ever witnessed, to be lost for words. "I'm getting married. And there's so much you don't know," I say. "And a lot of that isn't your fault, but this..." I wave a finger back and forth in the narrow space separating us across the table, between us. "It sucks that it's over, and it hurts me too. But it's done, Elle." Then, Friday, December 21st, 15 years ago. As if Dad knew that I was delicate after the conversation about Christmas sans Mom with Elliot, he was even quieter than usual at dinner Thursday night.
"Do you want to go to Goat Rock tomorrow?"
he asked when he finished his chicken. Goat Rock, the windy beach where the Russian River collides with the Pacific Ocean. It is notoriously cold, with a dangerous rip current rendering the beach unsafe for even wading into the water, and so much sand blustering in the air that it's nearly impossible to grill hot dogs. I loved it. Sometimes sea lions and elephant seals lazed at the mouth of the river. Dark, rich seaweed washed up on shore, heavy with salt and nearly unreal to me in its otherworldly, translucent oddness. Sand dunes dotted the shoreline, and in the center of the beach and out a narrow isthmus was the lonely giant rock, jutting straight up more than 100 feet as if it had been dropped there.
"You could invite Elliot if you wanted," he added.
I looked up at him and nodded. The entire drive there, Elliot was fidgety. He shifted in his seat, tugged at his seatbelt, ran his hand through his hair, futzed with his headgear. After about 10 minutes, I gave up on trying to focus on my book. "What's with you?" I hissed across the back seat. He glanced at Dad in the driver's seat and then back at me.
"Nothing."
I felt, more than saw, Dad looking in the rearview mirror at what was going on in the back seat. I stared at Elliot's hands, reaching now to toy with the strap of his backpack. They looked different. Bigger. He was still so skinny, but also so at home in his gawkiness that I didn't notice it anymore unless I really looked. Dad pulled into the parking lot and we stepped out. Shocked at how the wind nearly knocked us over, we jerked our coats on, pulled our hats over our ears.
"No farther down the beach than the rock,"
Dad said, pulling his own treat, a pack of Danish cigarettes, out of his pocket. He never smoked near me. He'd officially quit as soon as Mom found out she was pregnant. The wind pushed his fair hair across his face, and he shook it away, squinting at me, saying without words, "You okay with this?" And I nodded. He tucked a cigarette between his lips, adding,
"And at least 50 feet back from the seals."
Elliot and I trudged over a sand dune, standing at the top and staring out at the ocean.
"Your dad intimidates the hell out of me,"
I laughed. "Because he's tall?"
"Tall," he agreed, "and quiet. He has the commanding presence thing down."
"He just says a lot more with his eyes than with his mouth."
"Unfortunately for me, I don't speak Danish eyeball."
I laughed again and looked at Elliot's profile as he stared out at the crashing waves.
"I didn't know he smoked," he said.
"Only a couple times a year. It's his private luxury, I guess." Elliot nodded, blurting,
"Okay, look, I got you a Christmas present."
I groaned.
"Ever gracious Macy."
With a smile, he began walking back down the other side of the sand dune toward the beach, and only now did I notice a small wrapped package tucked beneath his arm. We navigated through thick sand, driftwood, and small hills of seaweed before reaching a tiny alcove, mostly guarded from the wind. Sitting, he shifted the package into both hands, staring down at it. From the shape, I could tell it was a book.
"I didn't expect you to get me anything,"
he said nervously.
"I'm always hanging out at your place on the weekends you're here, so I feel like I owe you."
"You don't owe me anything." I worked to tamp down the emotion I felt that he got me a book. Not just because it's what we did together, read, but because of what I told him last night about Mom and gifts. "You know you can always come over. I don't have siblings, it's just me and Dad."
"Well,"
he said, handing me the package,
"maybe that's sort of why I got this."
Curious, I tore open the paper and looked down. I nearly lost the wrapping paper to a brutal gust of wind. "Bridge to Terabithia."
"Have you read it?"
Elliot asked. I shook my head, pulling my wind-blown hair out of my face. "I've heard of it." I saw him exhale quietly in relief. "I think..." He nodded, and seeming to be more settled, bent to pick up a stone to throw into the surf. "Thank you," I told him, though I wasn't sure he heard me over the roar of the ocean. Elliot looked up and smiled at me.
"I hope you like it as much as I did. I sort of feel like I could be your Maybelle."
Now, Thursday, October 5th. My phone vibrates in my messenger bag on the bus, conveniently waking me only a block from my stop. I pull it out, realizing that it's nearly 2 in the morning again, and I'm staring down at Viv's little face on the screen. "Viv, you've learned technology so quickly," I say, standing to pull my bag over my shoulder and make my way unsteadily down the narrow bus aisle. Sabrina laughs on the other end. "I totally ganked your phone when you went to order food and changed my profile pic. Your passcodes are so adorably predictable." I growl, trying to be annoyed, but really only 2 people would know the 4-digit PIN I use for nearly everything, Sabrina and Elliot. It's my lucky number, 15, repeated. "I'll change it," I tell her, thanking the bus driver with a smile he ignores as I step down and onto my street.
"Don't,"
Sabrina cautions. "You'll forget it." "I'll have you know I'm great with numbers." Silence greets me on the other end of the line, and I amend. At least the math kind of numbers, when they're right in front of me and I have a pencil. I stare up the steep hill I still need to climb before I can be in bed. "Did you call just to harass me? What are you even doing up?" "I'm feeding the baby, obviously. I assumed you'd be on your way home. I called to check up on you. You fled yesterday." Nodding, I begin my slow trudge uphill. The air is dense with moisture, and the incline after the day I had feels nearly vertical. Elliot caught me on the sidewalk. Figured that when he sprinted out of there. He wasn't super happy with me for, you know, losing touch. I hear her quiet scoff. Losing touch, she repeats. Is that what we're calling it? Ignoring this, I say, he tracked me down again today. He broke up with his girlfriend last night after seeing me. Sabrina coos through the line, and I stop walking. What is that noise you're making? I ask. It's sweet, that's all. You're on his side? Her tiny bead of silence communicates the magnitude of her disbelief. You're telling me there was absolutely no swooning when he told you that? You just don't like Sean. Don't be ridiculous. He's the first guy who's managed to last beyond 3 dates. Of course I like him. He deserves my esteem for beating that record. I am so tired. I can feel the unreasonable coming out. Tight defensiveness rises up in my chest, kickstarting my pulse. Okay, let me clarify. You don't want me to marry Sean. Macy, honey, I don't want you to marry Sean. Yet. That's true. But that's unrelated to me also wanting you to reconnect with Elliot. I adore you. You know this, but you've told me what it was like when your mom died. How hard you worked to keep everyone out or at arm's length. A can of worms we could totally open up if you have the time, Sabrina. My point is that you could never shut out Elliot. He's your soulmate. You think I don't know that? I nod, walking again. I've been on my feet for so long that my toes are numb in my shoes. I'm essentially just shuffling slowly uphill. I'm so tired. Oh, honey, she says gently. And there's something else, I say, hesitating. Yeah? He didn't know about my dad. The truth of that one still stings. Sabrina gasps. What? I know. That part's all my fault. I get that. I rub my face. I just assumed he would have heard about it. Through the grapevine. She's gone quiet, and it's the quiet that nearly breaks me because, holy hell, I'm a monster. Sabrina must be thinking for the 1,000th time that I am dead inside. You'd be fine if his parents died, she begins slowly. And he didn't at least try to get in touch with you? Miss Dina's warm eyes and soft face with deep dimples flicker through my thoughts, sending a spike of pain through me. I know. I see your point. Sabrina's silent again. I hate having this conversation over the phone. I want the reassuring presence of her on the couch next to me. I'm not sure Elliot and I could just be friends. She huffs out a breath. I think it's worth a try. Would I even be able to stay away? If I'm honest, wasn't part of the appeal of moving back here to be closer to what he and I once had, somehow? You really think it's a good idea for me to reconnect with him? I ask. I've always thought that. How? I hear how small my voice seems and pull out my keys, propping my phone between my ear and shoulder when I drop them to the dark porch. We had breakfast and I bolted. I don't have his number or address. No way does he have Facebook or Twitter or anything. Normal modes of stalking are out. I can hear Sabrina's pensive hum as I search blindly for my house key. You'll think of something. Then, 14 years ago. From Macy Leah Sorensen. Mean Lily Blomst at hotmail.com. Date, January 1st, 11 p.m. To Elliot P., Elliver's Travels at yahoo.com. Subject, book. Hi, Elliot. Thanks again for Bridge to Terabithia. And sorry for getting snot all over your shirt when I was trying to talk about it. Maybe now on the computer I can explain what I was trying to say. I get why you gave me this book. And I just want you to know how thoughtful it was. I keep thinking about the first day I saw you in the closet, and how it's sort of how Jesse hated Leslie for beating him in a race. I didn't hate you, but I wasn't sure I liked you either. I guess it doesn't matter, because now it feels like you're the person who understands me the best. Jesse and Leslie made up Terabithia as their sanctuary, and when she died, he brought Maybelle there to be the new princess. Mom created this world of books with me, but
But without her, I can bring you to the closet to share them instead. I read it again on the drive home and started crying all over again, and I thought my dad was going to totally lose it. He probably had no idea what was going on. He was all, "What is with you, weirdo?" So he just pulled over and kept breathing all deep and asking me what happened. I told him you gave me this sad book. I told him how much it made me miss Mom. And then he cried when we got home. At least I think he did. He's always so quiet, so I'm never sure. I hate being sad in front of him because it's like he has this giant vault of sadness already, and then he has to lock that all up just to take care of me. And when I think about it, I still have him, but he lost his whole world. Mom was the person he chose out of everyone, and she's gone. I don't know. I think he doesn't like to see me cry, but it was good to talk about her. I'm scared I'll forget her. I miss her so much, I need a new language for it. There I go again. Anyway, did you finish Ivanhoed? That book was ginormous. I would be asleep in about 5 minutes. I read the first page when you went to the bathroom and was all, "What?" I understood about a millionth of it. What's it even about? Anyway, school tomorrow. Thanks again for the book, and for just letting me talk about it, I guess. XO, Macy. P.S. No one here understands that I just want to be another girl at school, not the kid whose mom died and who needs to be treated like she can break. Thanks for just saying stuff and not acting like it's all taboo. From Elliot P., Elliverse Travels at Yahoo.com, date January 2nd, 7:02 a.m., to Macy Leah Sorensen, Min Lille Blomst at Hotmail.com, subject, reply, book.
Hi, Macy. You're welcome for the book. It made me cry the first time I read it, too. I know I didn't tell you that, but I guess I should have. I'm sure your dad figured out why you were crying. Also, I think it probably makes your dad happy that you're crying about it, even if he's sad that you're sad. But I hope he's not mad at me for making you cry. I mean, it was the book. I wouldn't want to make you cry because of me. I don't think you're weird or different because your mom died. I think you're actually pretty cool, but it has nothing to do with whether or not you have a mom. You're cool because you're you. As an aside, you're handling it pretty well as far as I can tell. Ivanhoe, no D, is pretty good. It's set in the 12th century after the Third Crusade. Some of the current idea of Robin Hood is based on a character, Locksley, but he's not the main character. I like the action and the style. I used to roleplay a little with my friend Brandon in 7th grade, so I guess that's where the interest in 12th century England came in. If you're still into Nicholas Sparks, you probably won't like Ivanhoe. See you. Elliot. P.S. I didn't mean that to sound condescending. Dad told me I can be like that, and so I'm not sure if that was. I'm sure Nicholas Sparks is really good, just different than Sir Walter Scott.
From Macy Leah Sorensen, Min Lille Blomst at Hotmail.com, date January 2nd, 8:32 p.m., to Elliot P. Elliver's Travels at Yahoo.com, subject, reply, book. Hi, Elliot. Nicholas Sparks is really, really good. My friend Elena's mom met him at a book conference and said he was super nice and way smart, too. I bet he's read Ivanhoe, no D. What do you mean you and Brandon role-played? Like the dork guys at the park with swords and flags? XO, Macy. From Elliot P., Elliver's Travels at Yahoo.com, date January 2nd, 8:54 p.m., to Macy Leah Sorensen, Min Lille Blomst at Hotmail.com, subject, reply, book.
Hi, Macy. Yes, exactly like that. And also helmets and cardboard horses. Elliot.
From Macy Leah Sorensen, Min Lille Blomst at Hotmail.com, date January 2nd, 9:06 p.m., to Elliot P., Elliver's Travels at Yahoo.com, subject, reply, book. I swear you make me laugh so hard. I know you're kidding, but I can totally picture you on a cardboard horse, all on guard and Ivanhoe. Macy. From Elliot P., Elliver's Travels at Yahoo.com, date January 2nd, 9:15 p.m., to Macy Leah Sorensen, Min Lille Blomst at Hotmail.com, subject, reply, book.
I was serious. We really did roleplay like that. It's actually a very well-organized community called the Nobles, and there are battles and royalty, and it's really fun. But I'm sure you wouldn't like it, because there's no soft-focus kiss at the end. Elliot.
From Macy Leah Sorensen, Mean Lele Blomst at hotmail.com. Date, January 3rd, 6:53 p.m. To Elliot P., Elliverstravels at yahoo.com. Subject, crazy. Hi, Elliot. I'm pretty sure that was you being condescending last night, so here is me being mature and ignoring it. Want to hear something crazy? My friend Nikki got suspended for making out with a guy in the cafeteria today. I was all, oh my god, what is happening? I told Dad, and he asked if I had kissed any boys, and I was all, no way. Who would I kiss at school? They're all losers. Anyway, that was crazy. Macy. From Elliot P., Elliverstravels at yahoo.com. Date, January 3rd, 8:27 p.m. To Macy Leah Sorensen, Min Lili Blomst at hotmail.com. Subject, reply, crazy.
My friend Christian got suspended last year for building a rocket in shop. I'm not even sure where he got the fuel, but it totally flew through the window and hit a car in the parking lot. It was awesome. So, you don't hang out with guys at your school? Elliot.
From Macy Leah Sorensen, Min Lili Blomst at hotmail.com. Date, January 4th, 7:32 a.m. To Elliot P., Elliverstravels at yahoo.com. Subject, reply, crazy. I do. Doug and Cody have been in school with me since first grade, so we are sorta close, but kissing close? No. They're nice, but I think I'll probably meet a college guy at some point, because the guys at my school are all into video games and skateboards, and Danny, another friend, totally tried to touch my butt once at a dance, but I was all, I don't think so. Macy. From Elliot P., Elliverstravels at yahoo.com. Date, January 4th, 7:34 a.m. To Macy Leah Sorensen, Min Lili Blomst at hotmail.com. Subject, reply, crazy.
Macy, punctuation is your friend. Elliot.
Now, Thursday, October 5th. Liz Petropoulos. What a trip. She's medium height, curvy, and has the most amazing skin. Also, no fewer than 4 times have I told her how much I covet her cheekbones. She's a smiler, saying hello to everyone who walks in the doors to the Mission Bay building, and stopping anyone without a badge, beckoning them to sign in. I raise my badge as I do every morning. Thankfully, she was on break yesterday when I burst in, frazzled after my non-breakfast with Elliot. But today, she smiles with a little glimmer in her eyes, like she knows more now than she did the last time I saw her. Well, hello, Liz Petropoulos, I say, approaching her, dropping any pretense. She hesitates only a beat before saying, Hi, Macy Sorensen, without having to check my badge. As I get closer, she smiles again. Boy, have I heard a lot about this Macy person over the past 7 years, and to think she's been the nice new Dr. Sorensen complimenting my cheekbones. Guess Elliot and George should give up and let us get married, I say, and she laughs. It's a round, delighted sound. Her expression straightens pretty quickly. I'm sorry I told him when you'd be in. She holds up a hand when I start to speak, and adds in a quieter voice, He told me about running into you, and we put 2 and 2 together. You can't know what it means to him that he's seen you. I know it's not my business, but about that. I lean my elbows on the broad marble reception desk and smile down at her so she knows I'm not about to get her fired. What do you say you do me one favor, and then we halt all non-approved information sharing? No question, Liz says, eyes wide. What can I do for you? His cell number would be fantastic. Friends call friends, I tell myself. The first step to fixing things is to talk, to clear the air once and for all, and then we can move on with life. Liz pulls out her phone, opens her favorites list, and bends, scribbling his phone number. Elliot's on her speed dial. But I get it. Attentive, considerate, emotionally mature Elliot would be the dream brother-in-law. Of course she's in regular contact with him. But don't tell him I have it, I tell her as she tears it off and hands it to me. I'm not sure how long it will be before I figure out what to say. Who am I kidding? This is such a bad idea. Elliot has a story to tell. I have a story to tell, too. We both have so many secrets, I'm not even sure we can backtrack that far. The entire walk down the hall to the residence break room. I keep checking the pocket in my scrubs pants to make sure that I haven't lost the small post-it folded inside. Not that I really needed it in the first place. I stared at the numbers the whole ride up to the fourth floor. I guess it never occurred to me that he would have the same phone number all this time. His number used to be a rhythm that would get stuck in my head like a song. I drop my bag in a locker in the break room and stare down at my phone. My rounds start in 5 minutes, and where I'm going, I need to be level-headed. If I don't do this now, it will be a stone in my shoe the entire shift. My heart is a thunder drum in my ear. Without overthinking it, I text, "I work 9 to 6 today. Do you want to meet for dinner? To talk." Only a few seconds later, a reply bubble appears. He's typing. Inexplicably, my palms begin to sweat. It hadn't occurred to me until now that he could say, "No, you're too big a dick. Forget it."
Is this Macy?
Or that he wouldn't have this number. I am an idiot. Yeah, sorry, I should have said.
Not at all. Tell me where and I'll be there.
Then, Thursday, March 13th, 14 years ago. As my 14th birthday approached, I could tell that Dad wasn't sure what to do. For as long as I could remember, we'd always done the same thing. He would make Abel Skeevers for breakfast, we'd all see a movie in the afternoon, and then I would pig out on a giant sundae for dinner and go to bed swearing I would never do that again. After Mom died, the routine didn't change. The constancy was important to me, a small reminder that she'd really been here. But this was the first year we'd had the weekend house, and the first year I had a close friend like Elliot. "Can we go to the house this weekend?" Dad's coffee cup paused in midair, his eyes meeting mine over the thread of steam. He blew over the top before taking a sip, swallowing, and setting it back on the table. Picking up his fork, he speared a piece of scrambled egg, doing his best to act casual. As if there was nothing that particularly thrilled or disappointed him about my request. It was the first time I'd asked to go up there, and I knew him well enough to know how relieved he was to be able to continually rely on the perfect predictions in Mom's list.
"Is that what you'd like to do this year? For your birthday?"
I looked down at my own eggs before nodding. "Yeah."
"Would you also like a party? We could bring a few friends up to the house. You could show them your library."
"No, my friends here wouldn't get it."
"Not like Elliot."
I took a bite and shrugged casually. "Yeah."
"He's a good friend?"
I nodded, staring at my plate as I speared another bite.
"You know you're too young to date,"
Dad said. My head shot up, eyes wide in horror. "Dad?" He laughed.
"Just making sure you understand the rules."
Blinking back down to my food, I mumbled, "Don't be gross. I just like it up there, okay?" My dad wasn't a big smiler. Not one of those people you think of and immediately picture with a big grin on his face. But right now, when I looked back up, he was smiling. Really smiling.
"Of course we can go to the house, Macy."
We drove up early Saturday morning, the first day of my spring break. There were two things Dad wanted to check off the list this week, including items 44 and 53, planting a tree that I could watch grow for many years and teaching me to chop firewood. Before I could run off into my book wonderland, Dad pulled a tiny sapling from the back of the car and hauled it into the side yard.
"Grab the shovel from the back,"
he said, kneeling to cut the plastic container away from the apple tree using a razor blade.
"Bring the work gloves."
In some ways, I always assumed I was my mother's child. I liked the color and clutter of our Berkeley house. I liked lively music in warm days and danced when I washed dishes. But up at the cabin, I realized I was my dad's kid, too. In the chill of the March wind snaking through the trees, we dug a deep pit in easy silence, communicating with the point of a finger or the tilt of a chin. When we'd finished and a proud little Gravenstein tree was firmly planted in our side yard, instead of enthusiastically wrapping his arms around me and gushing his love in my ear, Dad cupped my face and bent, pressing a kiss to my forehead.
Good work, mein Lille Blomst.
He looked down at me.
I'm going to town for groceries.
With this permission, I took off. My shoes pounded on the ground as I moved in a straight path from the end of our driveway to the top of Elliot's. The doorbell rang throughout the house, carrying back to me from the open windows overhead. A loud bark reached my ears, followed by the clumsy scratch of a dog's nails against wooden floors.
Shut it, Darcy,
a sleepy voice said, and the dog fell silent, only to release a few small apologetic whines. It occurred to me that in the nearly 6 months we'd had the cabin, I hadn't been inside Elliot's house. Miss Dina had invited us, of course, but Dad seemed to feel it was wrong to intrude. I think he also liked the solitude of our house on the weekends. Elliot's presence accepted, of course. Dad liked not having to come out of his shell. I took a step back, nerves rising when the door opened, and a yawning, shaggy-haired Andreas stood in front of me. The second oldest Petropolis brother had clearly just climbed out of bed, messy brown hair, sleep lines on his face, no shirt, and basketball shorts that defied gravity by barely clinging low on his hips. He had the kind of body I hadn't been entirely sure until that moment actually existed. Is this what Elliot would look like in a couple of years? My mind could barely handle the idea.
Hey, Macy,
he said. It sounded like a growl, like a sin. He stood back, holding open the door and waiting for me to follow.
You coming in or not?
I willed my eyebrows to inch back down my forehead. Oh, sure. It did smell like cookies inside. Cookies and boy. Andreas smiled and lazily scratched his stomach.
You guys are up for the weekend?
I nodded, and his smile widened.
And very talkative, I see.
Sorry, I said, and then stood there, arms at my sides, fingers pulling at the hem of my shorts, still not sure what to say. Is Elliot home?
I'll grab him.
Andreas grinned and walked toward the staircase.
Hey, Elle, your girlfriend is here.
His voice echoed in the wooden entryway as my body exploded into a scorching blush. Before I could answer, there was the sound of feet pounding on the floor above us.
You're such a douche,
Elliot said, barreling down the stairs and into his brother. Andreas grunted with the blow and grabbed Elliot, putting him in a headlock. Andreas was taller and pretty muscular, but Elliot seemed to have the desire to avoid public humiliation on his side. The two boys wrestled, came dangerously close to knocking over a lamp, said a bunch of words I wasn't even supposed to think, and then finally broke apart, panting.
Sorry,
Elliot said to me, still glaring at Andreas. He adjusted his glasses and straightened his clothes.
My brother thinks he's funny and apparently can't dress himself.
He motions to Andreas's bare chest. Andreas messed up Elliot's hair even more and rolled his eyes.
It's barely noon, prick. I think Mom should have you tested for narcolepsy.
With a dull punch to Elliot's shoulder, Andreas turned toward the stairs.
I'm heading to Amy's. Nice seeing you, Macy.
You too, I said lamely. Andreas winked over his shoulder.
Oh, and Elliot?
He called.
Yeah. Door open.
His booming laugh filled the upstairs hall before finally disappearing behind the click of a closed door. Elliot started toward the stairs, but then stopped, turning around to frown at me.
Let's go to your house.
You don't want to show me around? With a groan, he turned and pointed around us.
Living room, dining room, kitchen through there.
He pivoted in place, indicating each room with a jab of his index finger. He walked up the stairs, and I followed him as he mumbled,
stairs,
and
hallway,
and
bathroom,
and
parents' room,
and a list of other monotone labels until we stood in front of a closed white door with a periodic table taped to it.
This one's mine.
Wow, that's expected, I said with a laugh. I was so happy to see his space, I felt a little dizzy.
I didn't put that there. Andreas did.
His voice took on an edge of defensiveness, as if he could only stand to be seen as 98% nerd. But you haven't taken it down, I pointed out.
It's a good poster. He got it at a science fair.
He turned to me and shrugged, dropping his eyes.
It would be a waste to get rid of it, and he'd give me endless crap if I put it inside my room.
He opened the door and said nothing, only stepping back to let me move past him into his bedroom. Anxiety and thrill hit me in a blast. I was entering a boy's bedroom. I was entering Elliot's bedroom. It was sparse and immaculate. Bed made, only a few dirty laundry items in a basket in the corner, drawers of his dresser neatly closed. The only disorder was in a pile of books stacked on his desk and a box of books in the corner. I sensed Elliot's tense presence behind me, could hear the jerky cadence of his breathing. I knew he wanted to get away from the chaos of his house and into the solitude of the closet, but I couldn't tear myself away. Behind his desk was a bulletin board with a few ribbons pinned there, a photograph, and a postcard with a picture of Maui. Moving closer, I leaned in, studying.
"Just some science fairs,"
he mumbled behind me, explaining the ribbons. First place in his category at the Sonoma County Science Fair 3 years in a row. "Wow." I looked over my shoulder at him. "You're smart." His smile came out crooked, his cheeks popped with color.
"Nah."
I turned back, examining the photograph tacked in the corner. In it were three boys, including Elliot, and a girl on the far left. It looked like it had been taken a few years ago. Discomfort itched in my chest. "Who are they?" Elliot cleared his throat and then leaned in, pointing. He brought with him a burst of deodorant, mildly acidic and piney, and something else, a scent that was completely boy and made my stomach drop.
That's Christian, me, Brandon, and Emma.
I'd heard these names in passing, casual stories about a class or a bike ride in the woods. With a sharp pang of jealousy, I realized that although Elliot was becoming my person, my safe place, and the only human other than Dad who I could truly trust, I didn't know his life very well at all. What side of him did these friends see? Did they get the smile that started out as a raised eyebrow and slowly spread to an amused twist of his lips? Did they get the laugh that overrode his tendency to be self-conscious and shot out in a loud, ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha? They look nice. I leaned back and felt him quickly step away from me.
"Yeah."
He went quiet, and the silence seemed to grow into a shimmering bubble around us. My ears started to ring, heart thudding, as I imagined this Emma sitting on the floor in the corner reading with him. His voice came in a whisper from behind me.
"But you're nicer."
I turned and met his eyes as he did his quick wince-nose-scrunch maneuver to get his glasses up higher. "You don't have to say that just because
my mom's pregnant,"
he blurted. And the bubble popped. I heard the stomping of feet along the hallway, the barking of the dog. My eyes went wide as his words sank in. "What?"
"Yeah, they told us last night."
He shoved his hair off his forehead.
"Apparently she's due in August."
"Holy crap! You're 14. It's going to be like 15 years younger than you."
"I know."
"Elliot, that's crazy."
"I know."
He bent down, retying his shoe.
"Seriously, though, I don't really want to talk about it. Can we go to your place? My mom has been queasy for a few weeks. Dad is acting insane. My brothers are dicks."
Nodding to the box of books, he added,
"And I have some classics to add to your library."
Dad gave us a knowing glance as we tromped inside and up the stairs.
"Isn't your birthday on Tuesday?"
Elliot asked, following me down the hallway. His shoes were falling apart, his favorite pair of checkered Vans, and one sole made a flapping sound every step. I looked back over my shoulder at him. "I told you that once, like 5 months ago."
"Shouldn't you only have to tell me once?"
I turned back, leading us into my room and all the way back into the closet. Since we'd moved in, the space had slowly taken on a life of its own and was now complete. Of course, there were the shelves along one entire wall, the beanbag chair in the far corner, and the futon couch on the wall opposite the bookcase. But only a couple of weeks before, Dad had painted the walls and ceiling a midnight blue, with silver and yellow stars dotted in constellations overhead. Two small lamps illuminated the space, one near each of the seating options. In the middle of the floor were blankets and more pillows. It was the perfect fort. Elliot curled up on the floor, pulling a fleece blanket onto his lap.
And you're on spring break?
I chewed my lip, nodding. Yeah. He fell quiet, and then asked,
Are you bummed you won't be with friends?
I am with a friend. I looked at him, widening my eyes meaningfully.